Friday night on the Fan pregame. We're mixing it up. Ailish and Donovan filling in for Justin, who's away for the weekend. How's it going?
It's going great. It's Friday. We talked to Cabrell Richards.
Woo!
Two former, and for me, the former is a capital F, university student athletes.
Yep, that's right.
Out bunch here of scholars. Just washed up talking about sports.
We put the, you know, academics first, of course. That's how we did it. Oh, God. We're going to have a Jays late start on the West Coast tonight, so a little later on tonight, 8:40 versus Oakland. Looking for Spencer Horowitz news, maybe called up, officially waiting to get more information on that. If it breaks while we're on the show, we'll let you know. And then we're 24 hours and a little bit away from night one of the Stanley Cup Final. Oilers in Florida kick things off. Hockey night in Canada. A little later on our show, we'll chat with Shayna Goldman of The Athletic around 6:30 to get more of an analytical look into this series. And we're going to bring Cabby in to get the vibes check. He's all the vibes, eh?
Cab doesn't have stats? He can't talk nerdy to us?
He can. He can definitely give us the betting odds and the analytical look into it that way. But, I mean, the last time the three of us were together, me, you, Cabby, was Canada's Ultimate Challenge, Sportsnet Edition.
Correct.
Where you still have an injury on your hand.
I do.
And Cabby whooped us. Like, we were embarrassed. Him and Faisal were on a team together, and you can check this all out. I think it's on Sportsnet YouTube page as well. Donovan and I were teammates. We won one challenge.
The Stanley Cup final cannot end soon enough because they continue to replay and
yeah,
replay.
You're seeing it a lot online.
Cabrell and Faisal need to give Faisal Kamisa love, winning three of the five challenges, being the overall winners. And me. I did not do my part. We talked about the fact that we're former student athletes.
Mm-hmm.
I mourn the loss to Cabby and Faisal more than anything in my very brief athletic career.
Yeah, it's a tough one for us to move on from. Let's bring in Cabby. Cabby joining us on Zoom. Cabby, congratulations again on being so good at sports. Yes. Yep.
I am the obnoxious winner. Thank you. Thank you, Ailish. I appreciate you. And you too, Donovan. Yeah. I appreciate you as well.
Are you all healed up and recovered? Like, Donovan's finger is still almost broken.
Yeah.
Listen, it was just, I was only, my ego was bruised, damaged actually, but physically I'm still fat and I'm still wonderful. So that's on point.
You brought home more trophies than anyone in this city has in a long time. Let's ask you about Calgary though, because I know you're out west and I don't know if I'd want to be in Calgary right now. It's kind of like nightmare bowl for you. You got your rivals, Edmonton and Stanley Cup, and then you've got Matthew Tkachuk, who left Calgary to go play for another team, who's going to be playing for the Stanley Cup. Like, who are you cheering for if you are a Calgarian, and if you're not giving yourself the Calgary vibe? Like, what is that city cheering for?
No, they got love for Matthew Tkachuk out here. I discovered, because he spent, you know, so many years in Calgary. So and they also have love for Sam Bennett too. So I think the diehard Flames fans they may not rock with Edmonton. I think the rest of the country is going to rock with Edmonton and, you know, McDavid, who's playing in God mode. Mm-hmm. But there are some people that are really happy for Matthew Tkachuk and Sam Bennett, I discovered recently in Calgary.
I love that they have love for my cousin, Sam Bennett. We are so hyped for him.
Yeah.
He's going to bring the cup to the cookout, put some sorrel in it. It's going to be amazing. Shout out to Cousin Sam.
Yeah.
So we want to know about not my brother from another mother, Sam Bennett, but yours, Connor McDavid, who is, I would argue to say, and this might be too much, but your modern day Kobe in terms of your number one foil in interviews. You know him well. You know what makes him tick. Him on this stage for you means what?
Hmm. Look, the league gave him the hockey establishment world, put the league on his shoulders at 18. They did it to Sid and they did it to McDavid. So this is a moment where his potential could be realized, like the ultimate potential. The guy's got, I think, what would it be BXA say the other day? He said it's like Santa Claus. He's got five Art Rosses, four something, three MVPs. Our Hart trophies, two something something. Mm-hmm. He now needs this one Stanley Cup. And I mean, the guy's electric. He's the only all universe player in this sport. You love Patrick Mahomes as much as I do. He's all universe in football. And so it would just be, I mean, it would be awesome for Canadians because obviously we'd the Stanley Cup would return on Canadian soil. And if Edmonton wins in game six at Rogers Place, that would be even crazier. Like the party on White Ave would be insane. I mean, I don't know if it would be like Toronto, like the Raptors in 19 when the Raptors, they won in Golden State, but that party on Yonge Street, but White Ave is a comp to Yonge Street in Toronto. And it would just be, you know, it would be lit.
The only thing that McDavid doesn't have is somebody to buy him beer. Did you see that video of him trying to shove a case of beer in his truck and people were all taking, you didn't see this? Get on the internet, Cabby. No. That's your whole thing.
Cabby, you haven't seen this video?
No, I missed it. No. But listen, McDavid doesn't need to provide.
He was buying a case of beer
anywhere he goes.
He was buying a case of beer after the conference championship.
He was moving the case to the trunk. I believe it was Molson. And there were a couple, how can I say this? There were fans. But there were a couple fans who were very excited to see him.
In Oilers jerseys, which was crazy too. Like it was like their moment.
This is true. And let's just say, Cab, these fans looked more like me and you than they did Ailish. And they broke all the social norms and got real close and real up in his face. And they were very hype. It was very cute. But as we've seen with the previous photo of McDavid at an airport, sometimes he likes his personal space.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, our people don't respect those mores and those values.
Understood. And that where are we gonna, you guys gonna play the clip or
no? We don't have that ability. I'll send it to you.
Okay. That photo in like 2000, what was it, 16 or 17?
Yeah, the airport.
He's like sandwiched between Legendary. Some fans. At the, I mean, it's hilarious, but I mean, the dude was like 18 or 19 yeah. years old. Listen, he's not gonna, I don't know if McDavid pays for meals anyway in Alberta. He definitely will not for like the rest of his life if he delivers a Stanley Cup. And hopefully he delivers like five of them. I mean, Edmonton is the city of champions. There are, what is it, five or six Stanley Cups, and I don't know how many Grey Cups, like 10. So it would just be adding to the collection in that city.
Well, you are speaking to exactly why I believe, unlike other previous years, when a Canadian team got to this stage, the rest of the country is not fully embracing getting on the bandwagon. You mentioned Calgary, rivalry. Mm-hmm. Vancouver, they just ended their season. Mm-hmm. In Toronto, we're more concerned about who's going on coffee dates than what's going on the ice right now. But Edmonton, they had a dynasty. They had Gretzky already. Now they get the next Gretzky. Even when Gretzky left, they still got a cup. And then they got bare first overall picks over and over and over until they got McDavid. I feel like the rest of Canada is like, y'all are good.
No, man. You just said he's the next Gretzky. Who doesn't want to see this guy win outside of Sunrise, Florida? Honestly, or I suppose in Vancouver. But the times that I really think, I mean, this is anecdotal. I don't know the numbers, but other than when Vancouver was in the final in 11, the COVID year where Montreal was in the, I think people rallied behind the Canadiens because it was such an improbable and such a great story, even though they beat Toronto they came back.
I wasn't rallying behind them, I'll tell you that.
Okay, fine. But like Carey Price, like almost like obviously figuratively put the team on his shoulders, but like it was a great story. But who doesn't want to see McJesus be McJesus, honestly?
I think more people are more likely to cheer for, and we were having this discussion off air with producer Mike Gentile. He was like, are you cheering for the Oilers? Or are you cheering for McDavid? And I think I'm cheering for McDavid, and he happens to play for the Oilers. But if McDavid played for the Panthers, would I be cheering for the Panthers? Probably. Because I want to see a superstar Canadian homegrown talent who hopefully is going to win us a gold medal at the Olympics soon have his moment of recognition, of stardom, that a lot of the greatest that are going up in the Mount Rushmores have. And if he doesn't get it, we're always going to be like, well, he didn't get the cup, right? Like, you know, how good is he? He's great. We know he's going to be one of the best ever. But this just solidifies our Canadian greatness. So I think I would probably cheer for McDavid if he was on the Stars.
Okay, hold on. Ailish, but did you cheer for Sid when Sid played Detroit in back-to-back years in 08, 09?
Yes, I've always been a Sid fan.
Really, when he played the Sharks and then the Predators in those finals. Okay.
Yeah.
If Chicago gets hot, you cheering for Connor Bedard?
Okay, that's so many years away. I can't think about that.
That's true. That is quite a ways away.
But you know, if we might come to that. Who knows?
If Bobrovsky, like if Florida wins, like we got to salute Sergei Bobrovsky for handling like the offenses that this guy saw: Tampa, Boston, New York, and now Edmonton. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know if he's in the Conn Smythe conversation, but he probably would be unless there's like a. What do we see last year in game five? Was it 9-3 Vegas over? Unless we see one of those stinkers, then this guy's probably in the Conn Smythe conversation if Florida wins the Stanley Cup.
I would say that Matthew Tkachuk like is someone I would cheer for as well. If I'm picking players, like, you know, obviously you saw enough Matthew Tkachuk, but like his style of play, I think, is going to be really interesting to watch against the Oilers. So tough and talented and spicy. And he brings that edge, but the Oilers' power play is so good. So I wonder how Florida's going to have to, like, taper that fierceness that they have, because they give the Oilers a power play, and it's historically one of the best ever. And so I wonder how they're going to, like, how do you game plan to not give the best power play ever in the world an opportunity, but you have that edgy style of play, like a Tkachuk. Like, they're kind of gritty. I wonder if they can sustain that against the Oilers.
That's a great question, and I guess we'll see. I mean... Mm-hmm. Salute early to Sasha Barkov, who's gonna be matched up against Connor McDavid for the whole series. Great point. I don't know how much Paul Maurice can like, you know, game play with the referees and stuff like that. I'm sure there's some I don't want to say antics, but there are some gamesmanship that the coaches can apply far beyond what my knowledge is of the game. But you're right, like. The Edmonton power play scores more than Christian McCaffrey, to bring it back into DJ's world. Like the dude, like these mother bleepers just score all the time. And if they go up 5-4 or 5-3, then it's like, it's going to be a short series. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if Edmonton like sweeps Florida? Like no one is predicting that.
No
one is predicting a sweep either way. But if Edmonton polishes these guys off and four or five games, it'd be like, whoa, like nobody saw that coming.
I have a question for both of you, actually. And this is because I think it relates to other sports too. Like Florida was here last year. They lost in the Stanley Cup final. They're here again. You guys are fans of all sports. And sometimes teams get a chance to like come back and have that dynasty opportunity. How much do you think Florida has learned from being there last year, watching the other teams celebrate on the ice and be like, damn, that was our chance. And now they're here again. They don't have to deal with like the shock and awe of being in a Stanley Cup final. The media, they understand it all. But I wonder, after all the sports that you follow, sometimes teams get there a couple times in a row and they finally break through. Like, do you think that gives Florida a little bit of an edge?
Go ahead, Kev.
I'm so surprised that Florida made it back. And I know this team is a wagon. Mm. I thought Boston would give them more of a fight, and New York was a President's Cup trophy winner. I know there's like it's like a curse. But yeah, obviously what they'll learn, I mean, the heartache and pain and the devastation that you face, not that I know, but I can empathize that any finalist feels like they're going to remember those feelings and carry that through. So maybe this is Florida's year. I'm surprised that they made it back based on who they had to, based on the gauntlet that they had to survive to get there. Unlike, and you speak about other sports, Ailish, unlike the Boston Celtics that had just like, oh, they're just like just skipping the park a little bit. Like, and that game one final was just like, what the heck? This guy's about 30 points the other day. So if Florida can survive this gauntlet, it's going to be one of the more impressive runs to the Stanley Cup championship, to hoisting Lord Stanley's Cup.
I do know that pain.
How do you see it?
I do know that pain that you speak of because I lost to you in 3 of 5 challenges in
I thought you were
going to
bring up the
challenge.
Western University Mustangs.
No.
Didn't you guys lose a Vanier or something when you guys played?
We lost in the 8th. I already got through that trauma, but thank you for bringing it back up.
It's back.
But I will have you know that the University of Western Ontario has more Yates than anybody in the country.
Bro.
There is a the.
Ailish, you know it's only the Ohio State.
The Ohio State University. They trademarked the.
Don't get it wrong. The.
Anyway.
To answer your question, which you asked probably 4 minutes ago, and this guy was out here filibustering. I think this is a nice thing to say, and on its surface, it makes sense, right? Like, I'm teaching my sons how to ride a bike, and it is much easier to ride with training wheels,
right,
and then to take them off. You've been through it. You kind of understand it. You've got your balance. However, I feel like it's just something we say in sports because it's a nice narrative. Oh, Jalen Hurts lost, and then on his iPhone, the screen was the confetti falling down, and he's going to come back, except they came back and they didn't get close and they were terrible down the stretch. Like, that's not how it works. Talk about catching strays. Your boy, Chris Knobloch, out here just eviscerating the Buffalo Bills.
Come on. Like, yeah,
how'd that work out for them? They got back four times. They got dealt with four times.
Yeah,
so I don't actually know in the moment if it matters. I think the best team ultimately wins. And I think that'll be the case here. Want to transition though, because Kev, you mentioned the Boston Celtics, who I do believe will sweep. Kate Fagan has a great TED Talk, and she talks about the fact that in sports, we don't really care about the best competition. That's the fallacy. We care about stakes and storylines. And we just spent a great deal of time talking about the Stanley Cup Finals because it has stakes and storylines for people that we care about. I feel like the NBA Finals has no juice. Because I feel like the stakes are what? This is the Kristaps Porzingis revenge game?
Yeah.
Like, do I care? Like, Kyrie is less of a bad person than when he was in Boston? Do I care? So,
Donovan, like, that storyline of Kyrie in Boston is hella juicy, though, bro.
Is it,
My guy was burning sage in the building. Like, so disrespectful. You think people in Boston are going to be mild-mannered about that?
He's got his Marie Kondo on.
The bleep you Kyrie chant, it was, like, audible on the broadcast. And, in fact, after the game, I think Kyrie said, I thought it was going to be louder.
Yeah, he said
Game two, buddy, on Sunday, it's going to be hella, like, much louder.
Because
they're going to take that personally, bro. So that's
These things happened. Thank you for giving us the Wikipedia of game one. My question is, do you care? Online right now, there's more conversation and juice about Caitlin Clark and what she is or isn't, and is it a flop or a flagrant 1,000, than the NBA Finals. And if I said that out loud in a microphone, forget about years ago, months ago, people would think that's blasphemy. But right now, it's true. I don't know. I just don't feel really compelled about this NBA Finals because I don't know, even though the teams are great, if ultimately the stakes and storylines mean anything at the end of the day.
I think...
But listen... I'll
jump in quickly. I think the idea that the Celtics are maybe one of the best Celtics teams to ever hit the floor, and the fact that they had no real struggle to get to this point, everyone was saying maybe it was the easiest pathway ever to a championship. I thought yesterday before the game, I'm like, if they blow this, it's like choker city. And then they came out and they just like ran all over, like Luka and Kyrie couldn't do anything. And I felt disappointed watching it too, because I thought maybe there'd be a pushback and maybe I would believe in the storyline of like the Celtics are frauds. And then they have this amazing game and you're like, oh, well, maybe they're just that good. So I felt a little disappointment that the Mavs just did nothing, but it is a long series. And I am really interested in like the Batman and Robin of Luka and Kyrie. And like, can they put this team on their back and make this a series? I guess that's where I've kind of fallen in back into a narrative, but the Celtics having all this pressure, can Jason Tatum actually deliver? I think that's maybe the storyline I had going into it. Cabby?
Ailish, I agree with you. It's going to be a long series, and the drama will present itself as the series moves along. If Boston is up 2-0, and then, you know, Dallas comes back and wins their two games at home, we got a pretty good series. Like, it's at least going six, and we don't – someone's going to drop 50 points. Someone's going to have a Nikola Jokic line, probably Luka, 35, 18, and 18. Like, there's going to be compelling theater. We haven't seen it yet, but it's going to happen. Always does. And also, the NBA is like really looking for the next great star to give the league to. We had Giannis win in 2022. Giannis is an amazing ambassador for the game and like an incredible player. Jokic won last year. He probably cares more about his horses or like the Belmont Stakes this weekend than play. I shouldn't say he probably cares. It's just like his RBF is like, I don't know, 7.5. But he's an incredible player. But like, and Jason Tatum isn't a guard, but one of these exciting players that attack the hoop like Tatum or Luka, like the league is waiting to move on from Steph and LeBron and KD and give the keys to another star. And one of the two stars in this series is will get the keys. And that's pretty exciting for the future of the game.
All right. I'm going to ask you about the Blue Jays because we're just talking about exciting things in this country. Okay. So.
And okay,
do they qualify?
No. No. So, but what could be exciting is a fire sale. What about if we just get to cover like a full on teardown? What do you want, Cabbie, from the Toronto Blue Jays in the next couple months?
No, I don't want a teardown.
Okay.
I don't want Vladdy and Bo to go anywhere. Like, no, okay. No.
So
like,
you want to run the same lineup out all the time?
Understood, and I think it that line is credited to Einstein, although I'm not sure that Einstein said it. You know, you mm-hmm. do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result is the definition of insanity. But like, just get to the playoffs, just get to like the wild card, and I know that's
just get to 500 is the current goal.
Okay, right, yeah, but guys, we're in June. You know, like teams go on runs in the second half mm-hmm. and. You know, you win 65% of your games in July and August, you're back in the conversation, like, immediately.
Sure, right? we're in June, but the season started in March. And this is almost carbon copy to the season last year. The sample size is not small.
Okay, yeah, you're right. It's a third of the way through, but we're not even at the All-Star break yet. So it's like, the panic button is here and so many people have either pushed it or like just
but
hovering
you're an optimist.
Above the I am. I'm an optimist.
I love that
so, no,
about
I
you.
I don't want a teardown. I don't want Bo and Vladdy to go anywhere because it's so rare that you get like the assets you get in a return of like a mega trade equal the talent that you send away. So listen, there's gonna be some retooling along the way and we gotta let some guys cook.
Well, you mentioned let guys cook, which is a great segue to something that has nothing to do with anything that's in the lineup. One, I just want to comment on what you said. We're not at the All-Star break yet. True. Mm-hmm. Which is why maybe you want to move some of these pieces early because yesterday's price is not today's price and these prices are not going up. So there's that. But another real question, I don't know if you noticed, I swear that I smell fish right now. I swear that
there's a kitchen right there.
There is a kitchen. You know the studio well. Yeah. For our listeners and
fish.
Viewers at home, this studio is about, you know, what?
20 feet.
Diagonal from a little kitchenette. And I thought this was a general rule, but maybe it's not. Where do you fall on bringing and reheating fish at work? Because I'm trying to talk to you.
You can't focus in here.
And all I smell is either fish sticks or Atlantic salmon or something.
I think it's like a breaded fish stick.
Okay.
Yeah, no bueno. That violates the code of conduct in any workplace. You cannot, I'm sure there was a scene in The Office about it, but you cannot reheat fish in the company microwave. Mm-mm. No bueno.
Mm-mm. Okay.
You should be shamed if you do that kind of behavior.
I think you can bring in something that isn't as potent as fish sticks.
Like sushi.
Well, yeah, you don't have to reheat that.
Yeah, we're not reheating sushi.
But I mean, we don't have a rule against fish.
What about like
fish,
a nice spaghetti? You could reheat a spaghetti, and I think everyone would be fine with that.
Yeah, or a rice bowl. Some flavors of chicken have nice aromas, but and maybe a little bit punchy, but not like fish.
If you
guys got to do a little investigation.
If I can be the defense lawyer, though,
it's okay.
For the alleged culprit, just the floor above us in the calf, they sell fish. So where do we draw I can buy fish, but I can't bring and heat fish? Where are we drawing the line as a society on fish at work?
But you're eating it in the calf, and that's where you should be smelling not in this beautiful studio we're in.
Just so we're clear, so we're setting precedent, you can purchase fish.
Yep.
Even if it's given you to go, you have to eat it in that vicinity.
I think that's
Once
fair.
You move about the office, it's offside.
I think that's fair.
All right.
Well, Cabbie, you can roll on this.
I think that's fair, too.
Okay. We'll have to, when we take a break, we're going to bust that door down, see who's out there.
Is there any sports you want to ask about as I take over the show?
What's your Keelan Clark thoughts?
Boy, what a tough rookie campaign. Interesting segue. I'm into it. I'm here for the drama.
Yeah.
I'm obviously here for the highlights and like the incredible performances. Mm. But I think it's only going to get spicier as the season goes along. And the Caitlin Clark experience will have some more drama in theater. And the team sucks. I mean, she's obviously the first overall pick for a reason because Indiana sucks. So we can't expect that many W's on her resume in a rookie season. But We can't expect like some pettiness in a very physical league. So I look forward to that.
I actually want to know your Caitlin Clark thoughts, not on her or her game, but more the discourse. I'm over it. Like I'm now have apathy towards anything Caitlin Clark related, because it's as if a bunch of people watch the season of The Succession and they think they're an expert on business practices in major mergers. A bunch of people who, and this is me talking, a bunch of people who didn't pay attention to women's sports or the WNBA now are weighing in. It's like, well, why do I care what you think? For you, someone who's entrenched in women's sports, what has the increase in eyeballs and thus opinions been like for you?
I think I can relate it kind of to what we saw with the PWHL in a sense. Like, it was like a firing of excitement and energy. But then with that, being fans, like, you're fanatics. That's the whole point of it. You have an opinion. And I think it's awesome to see a lot of people talking about women's sports, caring about women's sports, and like these women getting their moment to make their own future in a sense. But yeah, I think that you got to do some weeding out of opinions, just like in anything, right? Like, there's some people that you just won't agree with, and there's some people's takes that come from a different angle. But I personally, when I was playing professional sports, would have loved more discourse about it, whether it's stuff you don't agree with or like challenging your opinion. Because when I played, there was nobody talking about it, so it didn't even matter, right? And I think that a lot of these girls are learning on the fly a little bit and how to deal with all the attention. And I think it just makes, I love watching it. I definitely do think I've filtered out some opinions, but like, that's everything in life, right?
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I like watching it too.
Yeah.
Well said. I became a Las Vegas fan, Aces fan, when I lived in Las Vegas. Mm. So that's a team that I rock. And I know it's super bandwagon-y because they're the best team in the WNBA and have been for several years. But that's the team that I rock.
Yeah, I can't wait for the Toronto team to come in a year.
And they're welcoming being villains. Their opening is the Belly soundtrack. And the local tourism authority is just like, yeah, $100K to all of you, just for fun.
Cab, I'll take it.
Before we let you go, are we ever going to see Tyson Paul?
November?
Wasn't the new date announced, like November 15th or something like that?
I understand that, but is it actually going to happen?
If I'm a betting man, yes. Will it meet our expectations? Like, will Mike Tyson commit murder in the ring? I suppose it's not murder if both parties agree to it.
Yeah, it's true.
But do we expect Mike Tyson to be like the 27-year-old version of himself? I don't know if we'll get that. I'm hopeful, because it would be like, this guy's just electric. It's like, you guys have met him in real life, right?
No.
No, Cab. We're not you,
okay?
We haven't been to Mike Tyson's house.
You guys have met Mike Tyson, right?
What is this? Humble brag. I thought
he's like old Colin right now.
No. I'm saying when Mike Tyson, he did like a media tour in Toronto when he was doing his one-man show.
He didn't pick us. He picked you.
He didn't pick me. I had to like...
Nobody contacted us about Mike Tyson.
I had to the Hangover 2 my way into Mike Tyson's interview suite to get some time with him.
Well, you did it.
But the dude, thank you. The dude is a lion, bro. Like when you... Sorry, I didn't mean to call you bro, Ailish. But like when you look him in the eyes, you're like, there is a lion in there. And it is... petrifying. So when Jake Paul gets like, when those laser beams are locked into his friggin' cornea and his retina, his inner monologue is gonna be not Snickers. What's the commercial like, want to get away? Or is it Southwest? That's gonna be going through his mind. Oh, one quick thing about Netflix. Okay. Isn't Jason Tatum in the new Netflix series, the one that the quarterback version of the NBA? So like, perhaps, I mean, if he is, there is a rumor, then perhaps that'll add additional context and drama and retrospectively
Donald
for you, Doc, as someone that loves documentaries, that can help with and re-enjoy the NBA Finals of 2020. Okay.
That would be nice, because I wasn't looking forward to those Sabonis scenes. That wasn't really doing it for me. So please, give me more Tatum content.
All right, Cabby, we got to let you go. We're up against the clock, but thanks for jumping on. Great to have you.
My pleasure. Great to
see
you.
Do you have
your
trophies? Or no? We'll sign off before we see your trophies. No? You didn't get to keep them, did you?
They're in a box.
Yeah. They're probably with all your other ones. Okay, Cabby, thanks. Enjoy the playoffs, and hopefully we'll chat soon.
Peace, guys. Great to see you.
Bye. That's Cabby. What a guy. What a vibe. I told you, he's bringing the vibes.
Yes, sir. On a Friday.
Chirping us, though. We'll take a quick break. We're going to talk to Shayna Goldman on the other side of the break about this Stanley Cup playoff matchup. She's super smart. We're not. Even though we were college athletes, the athlete came first. Shayna Goldman on the other side from The Athletic and the Too Many Men pod. We'll get you teed up for tonight and the Blue Jays to come.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Fan Pregame Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Breaking Blue Jays news. This one's a shocker. I did mention that we thought we'd hear Spencer Horwitz's name getting called up from AAA, but in that, Kevin Biggio DFA'd, a longtime Blue Jay, looking like he's on his way out the door. I think he's probably had one of the worst, I think it's statistically his worst season ever, but he's just kind of been around for a long time. I know that Schneider really liked him. He's just been a bit of this tandem to come up, and maybe it's a sign of things to change and things are going to happen with this team because you're making harder decisions in terms of players that meant something to this Blue Jays team. So Biggio DFA'd ahead of tonight's game with the Oakland Athletics. We're going to get to that and more a little bit later in the show. That game's not until 9:40 tonight, but wanted to let the listeners know what's up with the Blue Jays. And Spencer Horwitz is going to be a great, hopeful boost of energy. Let's bring in Shayna Goldman of the Athletic and Too Many Men podcast. Help us tee up tomorrow night. Finally, we had to wait so long, Shayna. How are you like containing, just writing so many articles? Like you just want to watch hockey now or what?
You know what? I enjoyed the break more than I thought I would.
Okay.
I feel like in the regular season, you can take a night off and go like, okay, the schedule is kind of light tonight. It's no big deal. In the playoffs, game's bad. It doesn't matter. True. You have to watch it and be kind of glued to it. So it's been nice. I think I'm one of the few people of this opinion, and obviously we're going to start missing it soon and getting anxious between games, but I didn't mind it.
Okay, so your preview with a couple other writers at The Athletic, I was shocked to see like a 50-50% chance, right? And like that doesn't happen often. I know it's a razor-thin margin when you look at these two teams. I think it's just a unique in its own that we're seeing the best versus the best. That doesn't always happen in the Stanley Cup. They had both really difficult paths to get here. But when you size up these two opponents, what's your main like question going into tomorrow night when this gets kicked off?
Yeah, I think a lot of people were probably surprised to see Edmonton up there because I think we all have these like preconceived notions about the Oilers. We're all waiting for the defense and the goaltending to collapse, right? Like it's the biggest flaw that they have. But when they're good, they really can be excellent. So that's going to be a big question. For me, my eye is definitely on the special teams battle more than I thought it would be, right? Because we know the Oilers' power play is dynamic, right? Best in the league, has been outstanding all postseason, which sometimes doesn't happen because special teams are the area you can scout the most and try to adjust for as much as possible. But it's their penalty kill that has been excellent. I think that they have one shorthanded goal for and only three goals against so far while shorthanded, and their underlying numbers are very good, too, to back that up. You know, they're really neck and neck with the Panthers, who we know are great while shorthanded. They contained the Rangers power play last round, so they each have a big test for each other, and they can really neutralize the special teams battle if they play to their heights on both ends of the ice, which I think adds a lot of intrigue and then makes the 5-on-5 matchup that much more interesting.
Well, your best penalty killer is often your goalie, and Skinner has been really good, obviously, but have we seen something like this, a precedent where on a run like this, a goalie has been pulled, then reinserted, and played at this high level?
You know, we actually have a couple times. Like, if I remember correctly, the year the Capitals won, Braden Holtby was not the starter for the first two games either. I think in recent years, we're seeing more teams be willing to play two goalies. And sometimes I think that narrative is taken the wrong way. Like, hey, it's a two-goalie league in the postseason, when no, it's not. You have a starter and a backup. But we're seeing teams be willing to give their goalie the night off to reset because it's a long postseason, just like years, you know, Corey Crawford was on the bench for the second half of a game, so Scott Darling could take over at their heights. Like, I think that's just what you need. You need to be able to trust your second goalie and be able to put them in if your starter isn't the ace that they're expected to be. And in the Oilers' case, they know their starter has his limitations. So if you can kind of let him unwind for the night and reset and, you know, try to go for it again the next game, why not? Obviously, would hope if they had a better backup, maybe we would have seen it a little bit more. But I feel like to see a goalie of his caliber behind a defense that we know has its flaws, that's the more impressive part for me. The fact that he's pulling it off despite what's in front of him at times.
Okay, so let's talk X factors. Obviously, for the Edmonton Oilers, it's probably Connor McDavid, and we've talked a lot about him. But I wonder, when you look at his progression throughout these series, he wasn't always the best player for the Edmonton Oilers, which is showing that they have a little bit more depth than I think I believed in. But he made their best, the other team's best players, look really silly. But now he's going against Barkov and Forsling and Ekblad, and he's going to have a really tough test to be that standout player. And if he can, he's probably going to take home the Conn Smythe. Just, what do you take of Connor's growth throughout this entire playoff process and how big he needs to be when it starts tomorrow night?
Yeah, I think at the beginning of the playoffs, some of us looked at him and thought, is he fully healthy? Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, I know in the regular season, a lot was made of his passing versus his shooting. And I really didn't think there was much to do with that. He was just outstanding at moving the puck. And if you have someone like Hyman who can actually convert on those chances, like, it clicks. But in the postseason to start, it did feel like that shot was missing a little bit of the oomph that we expected to have. But I think he's just gotten better as the postseason has gone on. And some of it's because I think he's playing with some of the best players he ever has, right? Because we've seen him with Leon Draisaitl before, but then you go, who else? Mm-hmm. And now it feels like in his minutes, the Oilers are operating like a five-man unit, which I would say, you look back at a team like Colorado when they won, they were doing that with McKinnon, Rantanen, Makar, and Taves, and they had that five-man unit, and the fifth player could have been interchangeable because the four are so good. For the Oilers, you can go Nugent Hopkins and Hyman and McDavid, and then you go Bouchard and Ekholm, that it allows McDavid to be McDavid without having to be the team in itself, right? Like, it wasn't only him. There's a lot more going in his minutes, which helps. And then the other part of it is, even when we see he's not having his best games, he has that star factor that when you're an elite player like he is, and he's above elite, right? This is a generational player. You can flip a game on its head in seconds. And he did that. And you saw that in game six with that unbelievable goal to get things going against Dallas. So I think we've seen a little bit of everything, right? Like, it doesn't just have to be him, but when they need something, he's ready to be the guy. And we just keep seeing him excel no matter the pressure, no matter the situation. So it's like he's being rewarded for that finally with the cup final appearance.
You know, what I love is that you not only give us data, but you give us some context around it, which is what I badly need in terms of figuring out how you build a model in such a unique case. When you look at this Stanley Cup final, two teams that are farther apart than ever before, over 4,000 kilometers, but also we're going to have an extra rest day in between changing cities. How, if at all, does that play into what we might see, whether it's with the goaltenders or just general rest?
Yeah, I think the travel day is going to be a good thing. I know there's been a lot of talk about it because, you know, there's gaps between games and sometimes it's that rest versus rest conversation. I think in this case, it'll help because it's a time of year where everyone's hurt and broken, right? Like, you don't get to the Stanley Cup final and walk around totally healthy. It's a matter of how broken you are. And the Panthers are the prime example of that, right? Mm-hmm. Last year, they came in limping and got even more hurt in the final that they just couldn't move forward. So the fact that they're healthier, it's going to help out this time around. But they're all dealing with something, right? So I think the extra rest day is going to be key here because it's going to allow everyone to kind of decompress for that extra second. And it's not as much of a sprint. And I guess at this time of year, you don't need it to be a sprint. It might help some with the adrenaline, right? But say you block a shot and you're bruised and hurting, you get that extra day. I think you're going to be pretty appreciative of it. And then the jet lag is another part of it. We saw the travel get talked about a bit with Nashville, Vancouver, and that was done in a really short span of time. So I feel like this kind of corrects that to avoid anything weighing on the cup final that you don't want to see happen, right? You never want to see the travel and the fatigue from that become the storyline, just as you don't want to see officiating or something become the storyline.
One thing that I think that Florida has as an advantage over Edmonton, I mean, it's 50-50, so you got to find the margins. But I think the Florida forecheck is maybe one of the best, most lethal that I've ever seen. Like, how hard is it to stop when they get that momentum going, and how big of a challenge will it be on Edmonton's defense that has maybe been one of their weakest parts of the postseason so far?
Yeah, that's a huge edge for them. And we saw them absolutely crush the Rangers in that regard because it wasn't just the Rangers like making their own mistakes in round three, but it was the Panthers, you know, just creating chaos for them. And it was funny because you go from a team like the Hurricanes, who you know to have some forecheck, and it's even better when it's the Panthers. Like, it says something, right? To me, that is the X factor in their game because we know that they have everything off the rush and more. You look at the year Andrew Brunette led them into the playoffs 2 years ago. They were the best rush team in the league. They were outstanding in transition. They were flying up the ice, and they got to the postseason. And it wasn't just that teams were taking away their rush game, which can happen in the playoffs. It's that they didn't have anything else in their toolbox to help. So the fact that they have that, I think it adds so much dimension to them that they can beat an opponent both ways. And that's going to help against Edmonton, a team that is very rush-based, the fact that they have the speed to keep up with them. But the forecheck is what's going to really wear down the Oilers and has worn down, I think, all of their opponents. And it trickles throughout the entire lineup. So I could see a scenario where they really own the neutral zone again and just keep making teams pay and keep them pinned in their own zone because they're such a tenacious team.
To that point, how much of an X factor is how this series is officiated? Mm. Obviously, Florida, an overly physical team at times, but also Edmonton, so much of their offense comes from having a man advantage. We know things get a little bit liberal in the postseason, but with this series in mind, how big of an X factor is that?
I mean, I think that there's a way to be physical but keep your discipline, and it's going to depend on the tone of the series, and I think we should see that pretty early on, right? Like, ideally, in a perfect world, we're going to get a gist of what playoff officiating looks like in this series in game one. And from there, we would hope to see that standard be the standard for every single game. Unfortunately, that never happens. So it's going to be tricky because you don't want to see game management, right? And you don't want to see it that officials feel like they can and can't call things because the Oilers are good on the power play. And it gives them such an edge if you give them that power play. You know the Panthers are physical, so you have to be, you know, keep them on their toes. I think it would help if they just call the game as they see it, find a standard, stick to it, and then we don't need to worry about that as much because, you know, the Panthers know how good the Oilers are on the power play, but they shouldn't have to change their game if they can stay within the lines, you know, just because of that. So it'll be interesting to see because, you know, like the NHL narrows down their officials as the postseason goes on, and everyone, I think, knows a lot of the names now, and not every referee in the final, I feel like, is as much of a household name. So I wonder how quickly they'll become them, and, you know, you never want that to be the case.
We're chatting with Shayna Goldman of the Athletic and Too Many Men podcast. Okay, so usually it's pretty clear who's going to be a Conn Smythe winner for these teams, but I find that there's like actually pretty healthy debate on some of these names. They're pretty close together in the betting odds. So if you were going to, you know, place a thought on Edmonton, who would you be giving that to?
Connor McDavid, hands down. Could I see Leandro Settle taking over the series? Sure, because he's so unbelievable in the playoffs, but it's got to be McDavid.
Okay, so the real question is really Florida, I think, because I do think that there's at least three names, and they look fairly close together, that you could make an argument for Matthew Tkachuk, Sergei Bobrovsky, Forsling, Ekblad. Like, I don't know. What's your number one?
I wouldn't have Bobrovsky at all, actually. I feel like it's tough. I feel like he got this playoff Bob name last year, and that's great for him because he was outstanding, and I feel like that narrative is carried into this year, and he's been fine, but he hasn't had to be like outstanding, and I don't think he's near the Conn Smythe heights of a Barkov or a Forsling. And I don't think Forsling will get it unless McDavid is silent in the series, right? Like, we see nothing from McDavid, then we'll see, because he plays a quieter game and he makes these subtle plays to shut down offense. But I think it's going to be Barkov because not only does he have that same subtle shutdown game, he has the scoring to go with it. And I feel like that's definitely pretty important in voting. Like, it tends to be, right? Because if we don't know how to define something, what do we turn to? We turn to points. And Barkov has them. And he's been, you know, absolutely excellent so far. I think he's one of the best players left in this final with like a 61% expected goals rate so far. And he's going up against top competition and still earning that. So for me, he has the very strong edge, but I could see a case where a Verhaeghe or a Tkachuk has, like, you know, the two Clutch brothers have their moments and take that title from him.
Okay, well, I got a couple futures floating around. I feel confident about them after you lay out some of those names, but there's always time to add. Shayna, we'll let you go. It's Friday night. Appreciate your time. Get ready for tomorrow. It's going to be a really fun, exciting series, and hopefully we can chat before the cup is lifted.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Shayna. Shayna Goldman of The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast. Justin, when he's here, is like the king of futures, right? Okay. And I never was into futures because I'm like, I don't want to see my money sitting there. I need it. I need it. And he got me into doing some Conn Smythe betting before the playoffs started. And some of them are aging really well. Some were an absolute disaster. That's like, kind of the way she goes. Well, I've got a future on McDavid. I've got a future on Barkov. Okay. And those are the two leaders. And I've recently added one for, I also had Connor McDavid too. But I had like Shesterkin and Ottinger, and they were looking so good until their defeated. So I think I'm in a good spot unless something crazy happens. Like when she mentioned Verhaeghe, I'm like, oh, should I put a future on Verhaeghe? I'm like, that's enough. No more futures on anyone. Just going to just live it out now and watch it happen.
Yeah, you don't want to spread your money too thin.
No, I mean, I'm saying like $5 bets. Yeah, I'm no cabbie here, you know? Like, just do what I can. But no, I should ask, but her actual prediction for the series, who's going to win? What's yours?
Oof, in my head or my heart? I think actually both. I do like Edmonton.
Oh, I love that.
I do like Edmonton.
I'm on board.
I just think that, we shouldn't have talked about their power play and how you want to avoid it at all costs. Mm-hmm. But their PK has been outstanding, and they come in on a heater. I really like them. I think they steal one in Sunrise and home ice flips, and I think it's going to be a real tough barn to play once they go into Rogers in Toronto. But Barkov is fascinating for me. Mm-hmm. Given your hockey expertise, I'd love your opinion on the fact that, what do you do with him? She talked about the fact that you want to make it a quiet night for McDavid. Mm-hmm. Do you match shifts in ice time, knowing that under Knobloch, he's really balanced their offense across the first two, at times three lines. Do you try to match star for star, or do you just keep him in his normal rotation?
You know, producer Mike brought this really great stat to us before the show, and I didn't realize like how excellent Barkov had been. But in round one, his matchup against Kucherov had one goal the whole series. Round two, his matchup with Pasternak, he had one goal the whole series. And then in the last round there against Panarin, one goal. That is Barkov's kitchen. Like, he is just smothering, sulky man. And I think that if you're Knobloch, everything that he's done so far has worked. He's pressed some buttons that you're questioning, and then it works. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Florida deals with home ice advantage for the first two games. And then when you get back to Edmonton, maybe you've just realized that McDavid is, like, completely out of the series and you need to play your hand and get that home ice advantage back. But those stats shows just like how incredible he is. And it's not a glamorous style. Like, he's just so tough to play against. And I mean, we mentioned it. The X factor is McDavid, really, and Draisaitl. But McDavid it's his moment. It's his team. If you can shut him down, this is going to be a quick series. So I don't know what I would do. I would clearly, if I was Paul Maurice, be putting my best player against McDavid. There's just no other way, right? Because it's unbelievable what he's been able to do with Barkov. But tomorrow night, we get to see it all. Let's do some quick best bets before we say goodbye. I'm sorry to bring it up, but I'm putting Caitlin Clark in mine. Just coincidence that it happened. I was just obviously following what's been going on at the WNBA, and she had her worst game ever. I mean, ever, like, small career here, but I think she only had like 3 points last time out. Tonight, they're playing the worst team in the league, the Washington Mystics, who are, once again, zero wins. I had them the other day against the Sky, and so I'm riding a hot hand. I'm going to have Caitlin Clark have a good 20-point night and her team to beat the Mystics. It's a plus 350 parlay. I just, you know, if she's going to put herself on the map and shut up all the haters, she'll go off against the worst team in the league. That's my thought.
Love it. Nice little bounce-back game for CeCe. I'm going with Connor McDavid to win the Conn Smythe. So a little bit of the future at this point. He's plus 200. Mm-hmm. 4 days ago, he was plus 250. Listen, I think if Edmonton wins, which we heard is a toss-up, he's getting it. Mm-hmm. Right? He'd have to play so bad to not get it. On the flip side with Florida, there are three real contenders who are behind him in terms of the odds. So you're spreading your money if you're going with the Panthers. So essentially, you might as well just parlay that with an Edmonton win.
That's true.
Because the two are the same. But the parlay that I would like, though, is Tkachuk, Conn Smythe, Jason Tatum, Conn Smythe, both Chaminade High School homies.
So cool.
On the big stage.
That is awesome. Think about that high school right now. Like, you've got two superstars playing for their championship, and both are favored to win.
Yes.
Like, they think they're having, like, the gym. They roll the TV in. Do you remember that?
Yes.
The VCR. It was always that guy. What's that? The scientist guy.
Bill Nye.
I loved Bill Nye. They bring it in on the TV. But I think nowadays they probably got a beautiful projector. But that school is probably having the time of their life, watching two alumni duke it out. Like
60 seconds in, someone screaming, can you get the lights? Yeah. Can someone turn off the lights?
It's streaming. We're streaming. All right. That's fun. I like that parlay. Maybe we'll take a look at it. Well, Donovan, thanks for jumping on
with
us.
We're so old. Now the kids probably watch it on individual iPads. There is no TV.
Oh, they got the Apple glasses.
That's right. Yeah.
They're sitting there in class watching it. If we mentioned it a little, you missed it a little earlier, Spencer Horwitz recalled from AAA. If I had the betting odds, I would put him to get a couple hits tonight because he's been red hot at AAA. But Kevin Biggio, DFA'd, which is the big news of the day. He was a part of that big group. You know, the Biggio, Vlad, Bo tandem came up together. Schneider. We won that championship with Schneider, and it's kind of a turning of the tide. So we'll see what happens there on a little later tonight on 9:40 on Sportsnet as they face the Oakland Athletics. Donovan, thanks for coming on, filling in.
Thank you. Enjoy wedding 7 of 16 this summer.
I got another big weekend. We'll see you guys on Monday. Thanks.